Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jordan with the Laundromat Resource Podcast. This is show 114, and I can't tell you how pumped I am, probably more pumped about this episode than any other episode that I've ever had here. This episode is incredible, and I promise, a guarantee, that if you make it to the end of this episode, your mind will be blown. And whether you're trying to buy your first laundromat, or whether you're trying to grow your existing laundromats, I don't care if you have one laundromat, zero laundromats, 30 laundromats, it does not matter. This episode is incredible. Michael is incredible. You're going to love what he has to say. You're going to love his story. But then at the end of this episode, we get into crazy detail about how he went from being homeless and sleeping in his laundromat to doing 40,000 plus a month in his laundromat. So this episode, and it's just detail. If you've ever needed to take notes in an episode, it's this one. In fact, it's so good. That's really all I want to say. I just want you to jump into this, hang tough to the whole end, because there's so much good stuff. And I'm not even going to come in on the back end, because I just want you to marinate on what he talks about this whole entire episode. So enjoy this. No fat. Well, your fast lane tip today: come join the pro community, laundromatresource.com/pro. Go check it out. Tons of great perks for being a part of the pro community. But without further ado, let's jump into it with Michael and be ready to have your mind blown. Michael, thank you for coming on the show. How are you doing today, man?
Doing great, Jordan. How are you doing?
I am doing excellent, excellent, excellent. I'm a little bit chilly over here, I got to be honest. It's, in the probably the low 60s, and my hands, I can barely feel them. I don't know. How you doing?
Same way we got it over here on the other side of the country.
Yeah. Where are you located?
Daytona Beach, Florida.
Oh, living the dream in Florida. I love it. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
We kind of chat a little bit, and I'm really excited to talk to you about your experience, with laundromats, cause I think you have a really good, story to tell. But before we get into your experience with laundromats, why don't you give us a little bit of background on who you are, and then we'll talk about how you got into this weird little industry that we're in here.
All right. The first thing I'll say here is, for everybody watching and listening at home, get out a pen and a paper. You're going to be writing down a lot of stuff here, because Jordan and I are committed to making this the very best episode of the Laundromat Resource ever. This is going to be very content heavy. This is going to be very practical advice heavy. This is one of those ones you probably want to be sitting down to watch this one.
Now, Hold on. I just got excited right now, because I did not know that you were going to say that, and I did not know we were bringing it hard. So I'll put my game face on. And we're going for it. I love it. All right. Get your notepads out and get your remarkables out. That's what I use to take notes. And let's get this thing going. Okay. So give us a background, and then we're going to get into it.
All right. So I think probably the part of my story where people will care about, yeah, childhood, all that, we skip past all that. I think the part of the story people are going to be most interested in was, what was I doing before I got into laundromats, and what triggered the interest in them?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll tell you is, it's a story of like one of those guys that he had it all, but he lost it and then got it all back. And that's a message of hope for everybody watching. It is possible to do that in today's world. Had it all. Well, here's what it is that I was working for one of the most respectable companies in financial services, Fidelity Investments. I had a very respectable job title with them, an office with my name on the door. People coming to see me for appointments, asking what to do with their money and everything. Not necessarily the corner office, but pretty close to it. Living in very nice apartments in Altamont Springs, eating at fancy restaurants, and every weekend is living that life that the single guys dream of. Going out, partying at the clubs, dancing, or pool parties. It was all fun and games for a long time, but I had a realization that this is all great and everything, but at any second, it really can be taken from me. It can go away, because I'm so heavily dependent on my employer. If the wrong person above me or the wrong customer has a complaint, it can all end. And this lavish lifestyle that I'm used to living will disappear. And when you look at these fancy jobs and their salaries and everything, there's a hidden component that they don't tell you about. And that's that the salary is as high as it is because the expenses and where you have to live to work that job are very high there too. If you're making, you know, say they're paying you $100,000 a year, but the cost of living in that area is $90,000, well, you can see why that is. Because you got expensive apartments and high gasoline costs, car maintenance costs because of all the driving you're going to have to do in the big city. And the groceries and clothes. I mean, we had to look very nice to be a financial advisor wearing the fancy suits and everything. So you spent through that salary pretty quickly. It was already spoken for by the time you got it. And it's the hand that feeds that you're so dependent on. And if one day, maybe nothing bad happens, but one day you stop liking it, which you will get sick of everything. It loses its nuance, its novelty. Then you're going to wake up one morning and be like, man, I really don't want to do this, but I'm stuck in this. And I had the realization a couple of times where the things that I would do for fun, they stopped being fun. I stopped with being able to enjoy them because I stopped enjoying my job and dreaded going back into work because it was the same conversations over and over again, trying to put people through these sales funnels to get them to do a certain thing and kind of looking at every person as just a number or something that you work this sales funnel template on or this scripted conversation on, instead of working with people one-to-one like an individual for their specific needs. It was, hey, boss says you got this product, you got to push it. Do whatever you can, get the customer to see it your way, get it to see it company's way. You get tired of that. And I had the realization one time doing something that I really enjoyed doing on the weekends was just going to the beach. Those days where you go out and you forget what time it is because you're having such a good time playing volleyball with your friends or something. And you realize what time it is when the sun goes down. But one day I wasn't enjoying it because as each second passed, it's ticking and ticking closer to the day that I got to wake up Monday morning and clock back into this job that I can't stand. And it's just barely giving me enough to cover the bills that I have to pay in order to work the job. You know, they say salary is the drug that they give you to make you forget your dreams. And it really dawned on me just sitting in my car one day before work, listening to that Metallica song, Unforgiven. The lyrics I'd never listened to before. I heard the song a million times, but I never really listened to the lyrics. But it's that point where James Hetfield is singing about, you know, they dedicate their lives to running all of his. He tries to please them all, the bitter man he is. And I was like, man, it's incredible. Like he's described my life to a T here, that in this corporate America, polished appearance, matrix world that we're living in, everything we do is for other people. And we never really get to do anything that we want to do. And when we get the time to do what we want to do, we don't really enjoy it because we're dreading going back to work when the weekend is over. So I was looking for anything I could to get out of that, to get out of the matrix. And laundromats, it wasn't anything special about it. It's like you could have sold me a business selling sweaters in the Sahara Desert. And if you had convinced me that it would get me out of corporate America, I would have bought it. That's how unhappy I was at my job. And that's really what led me into laundromats. You know, first, I wanted to get into the storage business, but the real estate investment trusts have bought up all these storage facilities and driven the price up so high that you got to be a millionaire to buy it. But laundromats was something where it was still kind of a hidden gem at the time back in 2021 when I bought it. It wasn't as like sought after like it is now, because a lot of people have the misconception like, oh, how can you get rich with quarters? They're not thinking about the real stickiness of the business and long-term relationships of customers, how those can benefit you if you gather enough of them up. So didn't really know much about laundromats. I did tune into many episodes of your show and Dave Menz and some others, but I was totally in over my head, no idea what I was getting into. And that's really the lessons that we're going to learn today here. When I talk about like how I was kind of thrown into the deep end with sharks because I got five competitors within 1 mile of the store. I was doing this specifically to get away from corporate America. When while I was doing it, it just made me more dependent on it at first until I finally got my head above water and realized what I was doing. And at one point, we got so destitute and so strained for money that, you know, spending money that my majority of my net worth was spent to acquire the business and to fix up the laundromats that I bought. But a lot of future income was getting spoken for already with credit cards and business loans. And it got so destitute to the point where I had to live inside my laundromat when the lease on my apartment ended because the crazy rental and real estate prices that are going on right now, I could not afford those back then. Couldn't take on another lease obligation, especially for a place that I really wasn't going to be that much. I was either going to be at my day job or I was going to be at the laundromats fixing things and tidying up, making sure everything works, doing customer service. I bought hook, line, and sinker into the misconception that a laundromat can be passive income. It's anything but the sort, unless you have a full staff of employees that are there 24/7 taking care of you everything. So I was just so desperate to get out of corporate America, blinded by my hatred for it, that I bought into the laundromat business and went into the deep end way over my head, but learned a lot of lessons. And that's why I'm here today. That's what we're going to talk about today here is everything that brought me to the point where I was good enough to get on Jordan's show and talk to him.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to dig into the story. I mean, we've talked, you know, before, and I know kind of what you've gone through and you've set the stage well. I mean, I think so many people who listen to the show and so many people who should be listening to the show, but don't yet, can identify with that feeling of I am desperate to get out of my current situation. I don't like my job. I don't like my financial situation. I don't like the feelings and the stress. I mean, I've been there. I know so many of us can relate with that and the desperation there. And, you know, kudos to you. I mean, I know you jumped into the deep end and into the middle of a pool of sharks and, but kudos to you for taking some action, right? Not dying a slow death. You almost kind of put yourself in a situation where you're gonna swim or you're gonna die a quick death and then have to totally restart over. And you know, I know a little bit about your story and we're gonna get into it for sure. But kudos to you for getting into it. Take me back to, okay, you're desperate to get out. How did laundromats become the thing that you focused on there to help you get out?
Yeah, I was interested in the idea because I remember at one point when I'd moved into my first house, I ended up selling this house later, but when I moved into my first house, there was plenty of time in the beginning where I didn't have working equipment for wash and dryer. So I had to visit laundromats. And I can just remember thinking, wow, man, this must be a pretty good racket because customers are coming in the door paying you to do their own work. And I was like, man, that must be a great business, like car wash or storage facilities or anywhere else where it's customer self-serve. And I think that's probably like where the first seed was planted that had me initially interested in it. I was looking for all sorts of businesses to, ironically, the laundromat business is nothing like this, but ironically, I was looking for businesses to get away from people because people is what was causing all of the headaches and everything that I had back when I was a financial advisor. And the great thing about businesses like parking lots or storage facilities and everything is that it's like real estate investing, but without the biggest cause of all the problems in real estate, which is people. And
biggest cause of all the problems just in general in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Cause of all problems on earth is people. So I'm just sitting here thinking, well, I'm still going to be dealing with people, but I'll have less interactions with them because they're supposed to help themselves. The vending machine business. learned the hard way. That's not the case with laundromats, but that was my trigger of interest into it, was trying to minimize interactions between me and the customer.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it is funny because it's true. I mean, there are plenty of laundromat owners that don't interact with customers very much, but you know, it's a people business. Like, it's a community business by and large. And so, it's a funny way to end up into the business by trying to get away from people when you're, you know, jumping into a community business there. So, okay. So, I mean, you were looking at all kinds of different businesses, and just a particular laundromat jumped out, or how did that happen to where you finally were like, okay, I'm going to buy this business?
It was completely by accident that I got the one that it did here, because I was living in Altamont Spring, which is the Orlando area. So I was thinking I could stay in that area and still work my day job till the laundromat got busy enough for me to quit the job. And there was one for sale on BuyBizSell that was in Orlando, but it was already sold. They just had to take the listing down. But the broker I talked to told me about one that he was about to list and hadn't put it up yet, that was over in South Daytona, which is here. And it was a great opportunity, because this is them retooling and completely remodeling a store that it once was a laundromat. The old owners didn't keep up with it. The business failed, and the machines, they were all broken down, so they had to get rid of them all. And they were going to come in with all new Speed Queen machines. And they said, this is a good opportunity because you're going to avoid a lot of the initial barriers to entry, like those environmental impact fees. Mm-hmm. So this would be like the closest brand new turnkey, lowest cost store that you could possibly get, is how the broker sold it to me. And I'm thinking in my head, when I hear the words turnkey, it's just, oh yeah, open the doors and the customers just come right in.
Yeah,
but I had no idea how much more work was going to be involved in it. So I would tell people that it was a brand new store, because it had been out of business for a good year before I got to take over. And those are good opportunities to look for, by the way, is zombie mats that failed, or laundromats, or things that used to be laundromats that failed. And you just kind of look at, well, wonder why they had failed. And in this case, it was just that the old owner didn't keep up with the machines and the maintenance. And when you got five competitors within 1 mile of the store, you got to be doing that stuff. You got to stay ahead of the curve. And he didn't. That's why he failed. And it was a good low cost way for me to get in initially. But the initial purchase price is not the only price that you pay at the beginning. You're going to find all sorts of new costs later on, which we did. We found all sorts of new things that needed to be fixed, or just putting in new machines and new drywall flooring and everything. So I'm in over my head with that one too.
Yeah. Okay. So when you talk to this broker, and he said, "Hey, I've got one that I'm listing," was that one did you purchase it, or did you purchase equipment? Like, how did that kind of play out in terms of how you actually acquired the business?
Okay. The commercial real estate is leased because it's in a plaza, and we got a landlord over all the tenants in the plaza. So part of the purchasing the business was entering into a lease with that landlord. And it's the distributor, Alliance, statewide or Alliance, or it's both. They're the ones that sold me the Speed Queen machines. The broker, he did more than just sell me the machines and give me the financing for it. He was really involved in the retooling and remodeling of the store. He's a good guy. And got electricians, plumbers, carpenters to come on out, make the place look nice and fancy. And had been working with me one-on-one a lot to kind of tell me, hey, this is what you're going to be paying for and everything. This is what you're getting into. Still, all I heard was good parts, actively ignoring the bad parts, just because I wanted to get out of corporate America so badly. But that's how it happened there. It's one of those contracts that you get with Alliance to buy the equipment, and they get you a location. They install everything and kind of really get you set to go. What you're left with is you got to open the doors. You got to market the place. You got to operate the place. And that sounds like it's small potatoes, but what they're doing for you compared to what they're handing off to you, it's incredibly disproportionately heavy on your side. You got to know that going in here. That's, you never buy a turnkey laundromat. No such thing as a turnkey businesses in this business.
Yeah. Ooh, interesting. I like it. Okay. So, real quick, I mean, we're going to get into when you first took over and what that was like and what your experience was like. But before we get into that, I think, you know, and I've asked this to a couple of people before, but I'm curious on your take, because you mentioned, hey, when you decided to buy this business, the majority of your net worth was going towards the acquisition of this business. And I talked to a lot of people on consulting calls and just kind of in general who are like overcome with fear to take that step to actually do. And maybe the beginning of your story is not actually going to help that in a lot of people because of, you know, how things kind of went down a little bit. But I'm curious, like, for you, was it just like straight, like the desperation that helped you overcome that fear of investing that money, or how did you overcome that fear of saying, okay, here's everything I have, pretty much, I'm going to go all in here with this business. How'd you take that step?
Well, to be honest with you, there's a lot of arrogance in it too, because it was November of 2021 when I wrote the down payment check and handed it to the broker. Now, let's wind the clocks back. What was going on in November of 2021, particularly for us guys in financial services? The market was good then. The majority of my net worth I'd had in investments in the stock market, crypto, and Bitcoin. That was the Bitcoin top, was November 2021.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, okay, yeah, this thing is going to continue forever here. We're eventually going to keep getting 20% returns in the stock market. Bitcoin's going to go to 100,000. So yeah, I'm in great shape here and everything. Write the check to the broker. And then that's when the decline for both stocks and the crypto markets began. And a lot of that stuff, it's not totally wiped out. It's just, it is down so bad here that that didn't help the situation either, particularly when I got to be writing lots of checks for new carpentry to come in, new flooring to be put in and everything. So what I would say to that person who is kind of paralyzed by fear, I will say you need a lot more money than you think you do, or than they tell you that you do. Whatever they quote you as a total price or a down price, I would multiply that by at least 3. And what you really want is to have that money out of investments and set aside safely in cash when you're ready to buy, or the moment you shake hands on the deal, get it into cash there, because you're going to be spending a lot of it. I was arrogant and made the mistake of thinking, oh, I know so much about investments. I'm a financial advisor here. I can leave that money in because I'm a smart investor. But no matter how smart you are, a receding tide is going to put all the ships out there in peril. So you're not too good or too smart or anything to not need money. You're not too clever or too good at negotiation. The price is down and everything, to not need money. And I'll tell you what, like, what's true for me, and I think true for a lot of people, is that just having feels better than spending money, because what comes with it is options. What comes with it is freedom. So you want to have a good mattress of cash to lay your head on.
Well, I appreciate you sharing. I mean, that's a very vulnerable thing to say, you know, I was just arrogant. Like that's a tough thing to say. So I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, for me, like I've looked back in my life, and when I bought my first laundromat, I was scared and I was nervous and I wasn't confident that I knew what I was doing, but I was very confident that, hey, listen, I've read everybody succeeds in this business. It's almost impossible to fail. And I genuinely thought, you know, I am better than most people at most things. And so I'm golden. I'm going to be great. Well, guess what? I lost a ton of money for a long time and did not know what to do and got humbled real quick with that first laundromat. And so, but that's a very hard thing to say and a hard thing to do. So I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that there's lessons to be learned there for all of us in, hey, you know, we can only control what we can control, and the things we can't control, you know, we're at a whim of, you know, the market or the crypto market has been beat up real bad. You know, and so, yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Okay. So when you said, yes, okay, I'm in, I'm buying this business, it was not built out yet. Is that the case? Or it was already built out?
I mean, the old store structure was there.
Right.
But man, I've got to find pictures of it, put like some before after pictures up, because it looked horrible. Absolutely horrible.
If you find those, by the way, send those over to me and I'll put them up and people can see them on the show notes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I will. It just was so outdated, and it had to be completely gutted and redone. I think to our last point here is that there's a little bit of a bias that we fall into that hurts us in the acquisition phase of this, is that you only visit successful laundromats if you're a laundromat customer. And when you're prospecting them too, you think of laundromats, you probably only visited successful ones in your life. And that was your impression of what the business is like. Like, hey, the one I visited, it seemed packed, looked like it was turning a lot of business over. But you don't visit the failures. You don't go to the laundromat graveyard and see the ones that are dying, because it's one that you would drive past because you wouldn't want to do business there or anything. So I think that a good thing for early education in this business is to find yourself a dying laundromat, not necessarily for the business opportunity of buying it, but just to learn. And sit there and ask yourself while you're looking at it, or you go inside and think, why is this place family? What are all the things that they're doing wrong here? And what could I do better if I either took over this store or opened up another store like it? And I think that you'll lose a lot of that false impression and that bias that you get when you see one that's struggling, and you see that failure is possible, because we've all seen the statistic. We got like a 96% success rate in laundromats.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I'm trying to write down all these quotes that, I mean, you're just spitting out gems already. So, yes. And I'm not very good at doing multiple things at once. Okay. So, take me back to, you have invested in this laundromat and it is open for business for the first time now. How were you feeling at that time? And what was that experience like?
Oh man, it was like, man, this feels too good to be true. Like, soon I'm going to be living my dream, sitting on the shores of Daytona Beach with a margarita in one hand and girlfriends on the other side of me, laying in a hammock, because the money is just rolling in from coins going into those machines. So that was, that lasted probably the first 3 days of the place being open for business. Before that, you know, there was a lot of going in there and painting and cleaning and thinking about marketing and everything. A lot of labor beforehand. But 3 days into it, I'm thinking, oh, it's coming soon, the wave of business and everything. But it slowly started to tick down into despair. It slowly started to, you know, the energy, the excitement was dying down and going away. With each day that passed by, where you'd see cars drive past the store, and, you know, you're looking through the windows and everything, because like all front face of the store is all windows. And I'm looking there. I'm thinking, is this a customer? No, it drove past. And there'd be some days where I was the only person in there all day long. Or there'd be other days where I just get one or two customers to come in. And of course, I gave them the most white glove treatment I possibly could. And like, hey, please tell all your friends about me and everything. And they're like, oh, I will. But yeah, really, does it ever come up in conversation with your friends? Hey, I went to a new laundromat today.
No. Right.
And on that note here, I must say that anybody that tells you that their primary source of marketing is word of mouth is a person that tells you, yeah, I don't know how we get our customers, because word of mouth is not as prevalent as people think it is. There were so many days like where we would get 10 to 12 customers a day, and it was a struggle to get those. And working my day job still, and then I'm working all day around the clock at the laundromat, trying to keep it clean and everything. The social life completely died. It was completely erased and eradicated. Lost all of my friends in this process. All the friends that I had at that time. Got new friends now. So don't feel too sorry for me. But yeah, lost all the friends, social life non-existent. It had been like living back in the 1800s, where you woke up at the crack of dawn every day and worked until it was too dark to continue working. And you did that 7 days a week. So there were some 22-hour days, but the average was 18 hours. And when I fell asleep, when I was living in the laundromat, sleeping on the floor, I slept well, not because it was comfortable, but because I was just so tired.
Yeah. So, okay. Sorry that this happened to you. Like, I mean, we've talked about this, but here's the situation, right? You're so desperate to get out of your job that you can't stand anymore, that you go out and buy a business to help you get out of that job. And you're working all day and all night, even more now. And you're sleeping on the floor at your business, at your laundromat. Some days, no customers come in. What's your mental, you're losing your friends. Like, what's your mental state at this point in the story?
Say like the one good thing going for me. I mean, it was a despair coming. There was one good thing going for me. I always keep this in my ear. Mm-hmm. I got a subscription to YouTube Premium, which allows you to just like listen to it. So I'm listening to YouTube Premium the whole time that I'm working in that laundromat. The whole time that I've got the free time to clean, or like there was one commercial customer that really kept the business alive, a vacation rental cleaner that would drop off a lot of sheets and towels and everything. It wouldn't be enough to be profitable, but it was enough to kind of keep the business lights on. Still weren't making a profit yet, though. Still losing money. But I'm listening to YouTube, listening to your show, listening to Waleed Cope. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of Dave Menz, a little bit of some of the a guy, I think it's Ken Barrett, the laundromat how to, was listening to him and everything. Mm-hmm. And just hoping that, like, yeah, maybe one day we'll turn around and be like one of these guys. But yeah, throughout when I didn't have this going in my ear, it was total despair, because you're writing checks for things that are breaking. There was still plumbing issues that came up later. That's why you want to have more capital set aside, because you will run into more problems, particularly when you're taking over either a new store or a retooled store, or even if you bought an old one, they're selling it because they don't want to deal with problems. You're going to inherit them. You do want to have money set aside for that. I was running into a ton of those. And yeah, there's just so much despair when, particularly when someone walks through the door and they're only in there to use the bathroom, or it's a charity solicitor that comes in and is asking you for money, and you're like, I'm the one that needs charity here. And, you know, and you lose hope very fast. And it got to a point where, before I even contacted you, I contacted a business broker, not the one that sold me the place. I was too ashamed to like show my face to him, thinking like, yeah, I'm going to be like his failure case here. He set me up with like the best thing possible, and I'm this complete moron loser that failed. And he's going to be like, dude, why can't you make this work? So I contact our business broker and I say, I got to get out of here. Help me get out of this. And what I told him, like, only cash flow I had for an entire month was $4,800. He's like, there is no way I can market that. And
that's another gross, right? $4,800 gross.
That was gross.
Yeah.
It was gross revenue. Yeah. Another business broker I contacted who said, well, you know, I might have this client that is interested in buying laundromats. Maybe I can get him to buy. He wants a laundromat for sure. And I'll always thank the fact that this guy was a total neophyte for not being able to sell my laundromat for me. I always thank it because now the laundromat's successful and everything. I didn't lose it. But he had asked me to send a pro forma over, and I was going to send him the exact same one that my broker sent. And I did. I attached it to the email. But this guy was like such a neophyte and really bad at technology. He had no idea how to open the attachment, never saw it. So his one customer that was interested in buying a laundromat never got the pro forma or anything. So a deal never happened. So thankfully, to the technological ignorance of this one broker guy here, I still have a business that became successful. But I can remember the night before sleeping on the floor in that laundromat, being so desperate and not being able to really sleep, just constantly looking up at the ceiling and thinking, man, I hope this guy can get me out of this because this is the biggest mistake of my life. But when that deal didn't happen, I was like, okay, I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm going to go contact Jordan. I'm sure he charges money or something here, but I'm going to go contact him. I'll pay whatever it is just to hear if there's hope, or maybe he could tell me, yeah, get rid of this place. It's you got the, what they call laundry milled, and mm-hmm. they just keep turning it over and over to make a commission. Mm-hmm. But either one of those things would have helped me at that point, because then I'd have some clarity.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's a tough spot. And, you know, I can't tell you how excited I am to be having this interview right now, because when we first talked, I didn't know if you were going to make it or not. Cause you know, it was tough, man. You're like, I'm sleeping in the laundromat. I want out, like help me get out. Okay. So, we'll get into that too. So, well, let's talk about that. Okay. So, I mean, you mentioned, okay, so it's not doing well at all. But you mentioned, hey, I'm glad I stuck with it because now it's doing a lot better. So walk us through, like, what changed from I'm desperate, I'm sleeping on the floor in my laundromat, I'm losing money, to I actually feel good about owning a laundromat now?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good question. The broker that sold me a place encouraged me, hey, do a free wash week. Do it. It's worth doing. And I was afraid to do it because I'm thinking, can I even afford to do that? Imagine what the water bills are going to be like. And I'd asked you in our first coaching session, should I do that? Everything. And I did end up doing it. What I was able to gather from that gave me hope was that there is a need out here for it, that there is enough people to make the business work in this laundromat. That's kind of where hope came back here, was when I ran that free wash week, and then the next week did a half price week. And then the week after that, we continued half prices as long as you paid with the pay range app, trying to get people into established weekly habits of being a customer of mine. Because yeah, you come here, you get these promos, you got a free wash this week and half prices the next. Now, you've come here 3 times in the last 3 weeks. It should be a habit by now, hoping that they were addicted to the place. And the free wash was also to get people out of competitor stores. I don't know. I don't really think or know or believe that any of that really helped with the marketing of the store. Don't think it necessarily did. But it did give me hope, because I saw, hey, people are coming here and there's people here that can use this place. And when I look at the people that came, it was like the demographic that you expect for the laundromats, the renters, the working class families and everything. So I see, well, I guess there is enough of them out here to sustain the business. And I was charging for the drying, and from like what I estimate for drying costs on an average load, it looked like we were doing 6 to 7 turns a day during those promo weeks. Now, after those promo weeks ended, we kind of went back to the same bad place we were in before, where very few people came in regularly. But it did kind of put us on the map in the sense of people know we exist now. And what it also had done was had gotten a commercial customer again after that. And you know, funny thing is, like, man, now we're probably the laundromat in the area that has the most commercial customers. That's something that we'll talk in depth about how to get those. But it was good enough to get me to believe in the place again and get out of that hole of despair of, man, I made the biggest mistake of my life. And now I can enjoy putting effort and energy into it. And one day in particular, where it really changed was, I was still working my day job, which was over in Orlando. That's 40 minutes away from Daytona, where the laundromat was. I had one of the worst days of work at my day job in Orlando. The boss, you think that it's kind of like a joke or something, but that people do, or an archetype just in movies and shows. But no, it's real. There is such a thing as having a sadistic boss. And they just chewed me out, dressed me down over results not being that great because, you know, I've got a lack of sleep and I'm working too much and there's like nothing happy happening in my life. So I'm not being a great salesman at the job either. So they chewed me out and ate me alive. And then one day I'm driving back to the laundromats going from Orlando to Daytona. And I get a call from a business broker saying, hey, I got a customer here who is going to list their laundromats with our firm. And that's going to take some time because, you know, you've got to find a buyer. We got to retool everything and all, but he does have a commercial customer that needs service right now. It's the Bethune-Cookman University. Their football team needs their jerseys washed just about every day. And they're willing to pay $100 a day to do it. And I was like, absolutely, I'll take that customer because I'm desperate for any business that I could get. But in that drive home, what I realized was, yeah, I think I know where I need to be now. I think I know where all my efforts need to be is in the laundromat working for myself instead of trying to save whatever pathetic career might be left at this job that I hate. And that's where, like, I regained the hope, where the story really turned around. And we had been all uphill ever since then. Slowly. It was a slow struggle uphill, but it was still progress.
Yeah, man, crazy, crazy and wild. Okay, so did you end up quitting your job at some point along the way, or are you still working there? What's the situation now?
Yes, so that happened in October is when I left Fidelity Investments because I had won over enough commercial customers to the point where it just wasn't possible at all for me to be able to work the day job and get all the wash, dry, folding done for these commercial customers. A lot of property managers that are doing rentals out here in Daytona Beach, and they drop off lots of linens. Like some that I got right now, they're managing about 60 properties. So there's a lot of linen in that. It just wasn't physically possible to do the job and serve these customers. And I was like, I know which thing I'd rather be doing. I know where I belong, where I'd rather be. So I'm going to do that instead. And there was enough from those commercial customers to pay the bills and give me a little bit of money to have an income myself as well. So that was recently, October 2022, when I was able to do that. And it was scary, but it felt really great afterwards. So, like, you know, in corporate America, you put on this facade where if you're a funny person, you can't really be funny because, you know, it might offend somebody's, not necessarily like offensive jokes, but just like, you know, there's somebody else that's not having a good day and they don't like you being happy, or your opinions you have to suppress. You got to put on this polished smiley appearance and put on these PR grins for people, their customers, and they're insulting you to your face, and you just got to stand there and take it and look happy and everything. Like it doesn't bother you when it does, but it does something to you physically that's incredibly bad. Like, I don't know if you can remember way back when you were a kid, the very first time you told a lie and you felt bad inside physically, you felt bad because you knew you did something wrong. I mean, your body has morality as well. And when you are immoral or when you're just not being your authentic self, your body attacks you saying you shouldn't do that. And the whole time that you're in corporate America, putting on this fake appearance and everything, being someone you're not, suppressing who you really are for the sake of a company image, that kind of has the exact same effect physically and emotionally. It really sucks your soul out of you. So yeah. Being able to escape that was it was one of the most liberating moments of my life.
Yeah. Well, hey, good for you. Love it. Congratulations on being able to do that. All right. So let's talk about, how did you said you had a slow incline of business. So, how did you do that? What did that look like? What are some of the practical things that you did to increase your business?
All right. After our promo weeks, we put up a promo for like almost each day to give people a reason to come on weekdays. See, weekend business, you're always going to have that. Always going to be people who need to do laundry on the weekends. But getting people in on the weekdays, that's the trouble. So we did small promos there. We have pay range installed in the machines, which I'll be getting rid of and replacing with the Sense card system that they've got. I'll talk about that later. But with Mondays, we call them Money Back Mondays, where if you spend $10 on pay range, we'll give you a $4 in-app credit. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people will think, oh man, that sounds nuts. You're giving away way too much here. How do you stay profitable? It's not hurt us one bit as far as profitability because pay range, and this is kind of why I'm getting rid of it, it's not too user-friendly. It's not that user-friendly. Like when you get a reward or a promo from it as a customer, you got to jump through a lot of steps here. So not everybody got the cash back reward ended up using it because they couldn't figure out how to. Even though the staff and I have tried to like proactively show people how to do it. Mm-hmm. Tuesdays, we have free detergent Tuesday. I just put out a bucket of detergent powder there. People can scoop from it. Wednesdays, we call that Big Wash Wednesday. And that's where our biggest washers, the 60 pounders, are discounted from $7.75 to $6. And then Thursdays, we're getting rid of this promo here because it was successful, but it was way too successful. It was a 30% Thursday where the drop-off service is 30% off. So instead of $1.25 a pound, it was like 87 cents a pound.
Yeah. Whoa. But that's, hey man, getting them in.
Yeah. So that encouraged a lot of business, got us a lot of new customers. Another thing that really helped was using Sense point of sale software for the drop-off service. As a lot of people think, well, all it does is it keeps you organized and notifies customers. I can do that pen and paper, and I can call customers and let them know laundry's done and everything. Yeah, you can. But there's a critical principle that you want to adhere to as religiously as you can in this business, and that's the principle of speed. You want to move as fast as you can. This is true for all businesses, not just laundromats. Speed is absolutely critical. Anything you can do to save time is absolutely worth it. And having this the Sense app that automatically notifies the customer by text message when their laundry is done, it may only save you 1 minute from dialing up and calling that customer or sending a text message yourself. But these minutes add up and they are critical. Other things with speed is getting paid as soon as possible. You want to collect money right away as quick as you can because money does a lot more for you sitting in bank, in the company bank account, than it does appearing on the accounts receivable side of your business balance sheet. You want that money in the bank because that money can be used right away to go market to other customers with Google ads, Facebook ads, and win you more business. You want to be, I don't want to say greedy or money hungry or anything or penny pinching, but you want to be taking those dollars in as fast as you can. And with drop-offs, the speed is critically important as well. You want to do those drop-offs right away if possible. I'm not saying that you got to advertise to the customer, hey, I'll get it done today. I'll get it done in 2 hours. But you want to get it done as soon as possible so that they don't stack up. Because when they stack up, we run into higher risks of running greater labor costs when your staff comes in to do it, or a greater risk of getting laundries mixed up, customer laundries mixed up, or losing things. So you definitely want to get them done as soon as possible, compared to that principle of speed as best as you can. Going back to your question, and then getting to the second principle to stick to religiously, is a principle of stickiness. You want to be as sticky with your customers as possible. And our wash and fold business was able to do that because, let's see, can I do this here? I'm going to share my screen with you. Where we got it? Here we go.
While you're pulling that up, in case you're listening on the podcast and not watching on the video, I'm going to post a link to just this section here. So in case you want to see visually what he's showing us, you can watch that part without having to watch the whole episode. So I'll put a link in the show notes there for you to be able to check that out.
All right. You're able to see this, right?
Yep.
Browser and everything. Okay. So this is a business card that all of my drop-off customers got. And what we did here was we'd stamp it every time they used it. This was, we don't necessarily do this here. We don't do 30 pounds free after 10 uses. What we do is now is, this was the first one I was doing, but what we do now is we'll give you 20 pounds free after we've done 400 pounds for you, which we can keep track of now through the Sends app, how many pounds we've done for that customer. And this is what's made it sticky, is customers are coming back to fill up that card and get their free use. You definitely want to set those kind of limitations to it. Like, you don't want to say, hey, your 11th use of us is free. You want to say, we'll do 20 pounds or so free for you after we've done 400 pounds, because that's just a 5% of the business that you've already done with this customer. And a customer that brings you that much, has brought 400 pounds to you, is a very profitable customer anyway. So you're going to want to keep them. This is a good way to do it and make it sticky with them. Some other things that you could do besides like a loyalty rewards card like this is in your, for self-serve customers, in your machines, that if they're able to accept cards, if you're using PayRange, you can have loyalty rewards built into those. I've got that where you spend $50, we will give you $5 back. There's other kinds of like rewards discounts that frequent users of it are able to use. When we get the Sense system installed on all the machines, those boxes where you can like swipe a card right on the machine, we're able to do that. We're going to be able to do something like that as well. And that helps reinforce the habit of coming there. And that's what you're trying to do, is reinforcing the habit. Anything that you can do to reinforce that is definitely worth doing here. I mean, if you're spending $100 a day in Google ads, don't be put off by that or anything, because as long as you see people coming into the store and they're new faces, even if that $100 was 20% of the revenue you made that day, those can be long-term customers. If you put a good impression on, if you win their loyalty, as long as they enjoyed the visit to your laundromat when they came in and found it superior to the competitors, that $100 of that day was worth spending, as long as you got enough customers to justify it. So anything you can do, laundromats are meant to be a sticky business. Anything you can do to reinforce that principle will help you. And that's what had helped me. And then the big thing that had helped me was with my YouTube premium subscription, I wasn't just listening to these laundromat podcasts, but also listening to digital social media marketing and Google Ads marketing, to just learn those ecosystems inside out. And I tell you what, if you haven't bought a laundromat yet, but you're going to, you're looking for it, first study digital marketing, study Google and those kind of ads, and study Facebook and Instagram, because you know, as evil as these social media companies are, they are the one thing that's keeping a lot of small businesses in business. So they can be your friend as a business owner when you understand how best to use them. So I would definitely recommend even if you're already in business, it's worth taking the time to learn. And that's what has led to a lot of our current success now. Was I just finally learned and understood how to market the business. Marketing will make or break your business.
Are you marketing for self-serve customers, for drop-off customers, for both? Both.
And it is two different kinds of marketing. Like the ad that I'm going to show a drop-off customer is different than the ad that I'd show for a self-serve customer, because they're two different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you marketing for the drop-off? Are you marketing both to commercial and residential, or are you focusing on one or the other in your marketing?
I'll show you exactly how I do it. Let's see here. I'm going to share the screen again. Here's something that you want to really know about inside outs, and that's what's called landing pages. Now, landing pages here, and this is just a homepage of our website, and we've got this slider going on here that shows, hey, this is what our laundromat looks like. Here's a drop-off service that we do, pickup and delivery. We also got commercial services and everything. We got all of that. This would be if somebody just kind of like stumbled on our page of everything that we do here from a Google search, or just typing in our name, DaytonaLaundromat.com. But the ads that I run specifically for drop-off customers, they're going to come to this landing page. And it's going to be looking a lot different here. This is something that maybe we can get into the details of, is that you're selling the benefits before anything else. And the benefit here is we're going to give you back 6 hours of time in your week by you delegating your laundry to us. I'm going to use all sorts of media here. Like this was a video that I'd put together. Video I'd put together just using stock footage from Pexels, as just to say, hey, look at this here. You have a family for those reasons not to be doing all this laundry here and everything. Kind of showing people why you use us. And then we come in with, here's what we do. Here's how good we are for you and everything. Going on about the benefits, get directions, got those call to actions and everything. Those are the kind of ads that I'd show a drop-off customer. And I also go through reasons and everything here. Whereas a self-serve customer, I'm going to show them a different kind of ad. Let's see. Do I have one I can show you here? I think I do. Let's see. We'll go back to, there's one. Because you know who our customer is. Typically, it's the ladies, and it's the mother in the family or something. Or maybe it's college students, or it's someone that just has lots of responsibilities that involve caring for other people. That's really our main customer, is the person with those responsibilities. What do they care about the most? They care about clean. They care about safe. Mm-hmm. They care about having help on hand when they need it, and like help from an actual person, not just a phone number. I honestly think that in a few years, unattended laundromats will be a thing of the past, because people need help. There's just so much that can go wrong. And with competition getting as tight as it is, if I can get help from a person on site as opposed to calling up some phone number where maybe the guy can't help me or not, I'm going with the bet where the guy has the keys to start the machines for me. And that's what I try to advertise in my ads to self-serve customers. Yeah. I'm not trying to compete on price, because that's just a race to the bottom. What I am competing on is I'm clean because I have someone there to clean the place at all hours of the day. I'm safe because somebody's there in case anything ever got out of hand. And also safe in the sense that if anything went wrong, we'd have somebody there to help you. If the machine stopped working, refund your money, move you to another machine. We do what Waleed Cope calls aggressive customer service, where
that's right.
Customer is unhappy and they're asking for something, just give them what they want. Because it's better to get gypped by a customer or grifted by one to shut them up and lose just a teeny bit of money there, then for them to leave that place very angry to the point where they're going to leave a nasty Google review or something that everybody else will see. So that's kind of like my advertising differences between drop-off and self-serve customers.
Yeah, that was awesome. And thanks for sharing. Again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, I'll have a link to his landing pages and his ad that he just showed. That way you can just go watch that little clip if you want to. Also, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about like, what does your business look like today versus yes. that very bleak and depressing and dark picture that you painted from what it looked like in the beginning?
All right. So I'll start with numbers that people think matter, but don't really matter. Then get into numbers that really matter. We did 4,800 gross 1 month. Month of October, we got very close to doing 40,000 gross income. And that's combining the wash and fold, the pickup and delivery at the self-serve mm-hmm. customers all together. Pretty close to 40,000 that month. And we're on track for another month like that this month of January.
Wait, hold on a second. Let's just rewind that a second. Okay, so you started out at 4,800 ish gross a month, and you had a month of what now?
Pretty close to 40,000, just shy of it, 39,800 something.
Holy guacamole! You almost 10x your business.
Exactly, we almost 10x'd it, and we can attribute all of that to the principles of speed, sticky, and marketing.
Wow. Are you like Grant Cardone over here? Like what's had the Grant Cardone? Let's just dub you right now. The Grant Cardone of Laundromat 10X and the business, mm-hmm. man, that's incredible. Yeah. I love to hear that because number one, like nobody should have to go through what you went through, in the beginning. And number two, I did not see that kind of growth coming when we first talked way back when. That's incredible, dude. I love hearing that. And huge, huge, huge kudos to you for persevering and sticking with it and not losing hope. Like I've talked before about how I don't know if this is common or not with people, but I suffer from the emotional roller coaster that is entrepreneurship, right? I can, in the same day, I can be at an all-time high. And then later that day it can be like one little thing that triggers me and I'm at an all-time low, right? I'm on this roller coaster. And I've talked about how I have to brainwash myself by being very, very, and you kind of had talked about this too, like being very intentional about what I let into my head, who I listen to, who I watch, what books I read, all of that, who I spend my time with even. You talked about that too with your friends and man, to help me try to regulate the emotional roller coaster. But man, kudos to you for sticking with it, brainwashing yourself to success. That's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. We got to get to the number that really matters though. Cause you know, the 40,000 gross number, that sounds great, but what were my expenses?
Yeah.
Cause expenses can eat up a lot of that. And here's what it is. It's like that month in particular, we just pocketed $10,000 in profit. And it's a pretty common profit margin for us to be 30 to 40%. I'm very aggressive with marketing because I want to really set us up as a place to go in this town. And I'm fighting five competitors. And another thing is I want to pay my employees very well because I think that employees are going to be an incredible resource. They're going to be like probably one of the greatest selling points of your business here to get people to come. So I pay them very well. So yeah, 40,000 sounds great. What you got to be okay with though is spend 25 to 30,000 to make 40,000. And still, we're in good profit margins here. I'm making more money than I did back when I was working my corporate job at Fidelity.
Well, and you're making a whole heck of a lot more money than you were those early months when you were losing money, right? Like that's, yeah. I mean, to me, that's, dude, I love that. Let me, Let me ask you this question, and I genuinely don't know the answer to it. Are you still sleeping at your laundromat?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, because I'm just there so much. Because that's another thing here is like, I don't want to paint it as like it's all rosy and everything yet, because I'm still going to be working around the clock. This time, though, I'm like having better days. It's more enjoyable work and everything, because I know we're making money. I'm not worried about money flying out the door and everything. So I still work pretty long days, like 10 hours or so. But that's because I really want to not just beat the competition, but monopolize the area. That's the vision that I have, is to be able to monopolize this area, because I know we're running a better operation than everybody else in town. So, and it is a competitive game of longevity. Just being able to be there the longest is going to give you an enormous advantage. So that's something that you got to bear in mind. To produce those kind of numbers, it will require a lot of involvement from you. And you got to be a competitive person if you're in a market like mine. As maybe if you're in a different kind of market, you might not have those kind of requisites like I do, like being having to spend thousands of dollars each month on marketing, having to bring in have three shifts a day of employees, or doing a lot of work there yourself, everything. That kind of effort, that kind of output is going to be required in a very competitive market. And I understand now why Dave Benn says he stays away from them, because, yeah, it's a lot of work. But if you're like me and you wound up in this situation not knowing anything, got in over your head, or perhaps like the place you bought, competition moved in, then you got to be able to do these things. But don't believe that you would have to be doing these things forever. You just do it until either the competitors concede to you, or when the customer base just has you permanently identified, the customer base in the area has you permanently identified as the most valuable place in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably for you, your next iteration, because I can tell you're still in the, I mean, you basically just said it, like you're still in the building the business phase right now, right? And eventually you're going to get to a point where you're like, okay, we built the business, we monopolize the area. The next iteration of that is beginning to remove yourself from more of the day to day, and inputting people to help you do even more of that. So, you know, the story is not over for you yet, and there's more iterations to come. And depending on which direction you want to go and how big you want to build your business, you're going to continue to evolve along the way. So, that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So, man, netting 10,000, I mean, that's incredible stuff. Are you doing a lot of pickup and delivery? Are you doing a lot of wash, dry, fold? Where's the majority kind of this income coming from?
Yeah. Lots of wash, dry, fold, very little pickup and delivery. I was hoping that there'd be a lot of it out here because it's a vacation town, and I was hoping that would save the business, but I think Happiness pulled out of the, Daytona area because they were only bringing in like 15,000 gross revenue a year for pickup and delivery.
Oh, wow.
So not too much of it out here. I think that it's just not being marketed correctly. It's something that eventually I want to figure out how to market those things, but there's not too much of it out here because people are happy to come drop off and see. I'll show you this here. Just kind of like where we are on the map and everything, that kind of shows like, and this is something that I would encourage every laundromat owner to do and to be able to understand this about their business. Just kind of look at the map. Here's what I can show you about my business here is that my store is right over here. It's this green dot. And for everybody listening, I'm showing this on the screen. So come to Jordan's YouTube channel to see this. Mm-hmm. Here's the beaches where all the vacation is going. There's no laundromats or wash and folds in this entire strip of land. There was this place, Aloha Laundry, but Hurricane Ian took them out. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about like, no, when I talk about my five competitors here and everything, you can see here's one, two, three, or actually this picture shows it better here. You see all these red, those are all my competitors within the area. Mm-hmm. And then here's where I saw like the opportunity is that in this big chunk of the city, there's no wash and folds. So for about 10 miles here, I mean, I'm right here in the corner, but for these 10 miles, there's no wash and fold. So I was like, man, if I could market to that, because there's lots of people that would use wash and fold in this area. If I could market to those people specifically and learn how to do that, then I could find ways to sustain my business while the self-serve side of the business starts building itself up. And that's what really saved us there, was being able to do that. And the Sense app really helped with it because it brought us back to the principle of speed. But yeah, not too much pickup and delivery out here. Probably will be in the future though.
Yeah. And that's kind of an encouraging thing actually, that nobody's really figured out how to tap into that pickup and delivery market yet. Cause there's going to be business there. So it's just a matter of figuring out the formula. Okay. Do you know a breakdown, like how much residential versus commercial are you doing?
Yes. I mean, I can show you this here too. I mean, I've got the, let's see, eight, I believe it's eight. How many commercial customers have I got? Got to get up in here, go back to our website. Because this is another thing you want to do for your landing pages with commercial customers is show off the ones that you're working with already. These aren't the only ones, but these are the eight biggest ones in the area that people would instantly recognize. But we got probably half of the drop-off business is done by commercial customers, and the other half is done by residential. And you can kind of expect that breakdown depending on like what kind of area that you live in, because in commercial business, it's more regular and it's probably larger drop-offs coming in. Whereas residential, it's there's a drop off less laundry at a time. Probably there's more time in between. It might be once a week or something, or maybe even once a month that they drop off. Whereas some of my commercial customers, it's going to be pretty much every day I get something from them, or a couple times a week. And the laundry needs of these two customers are so different and everything. You can kind of expect it to be half and half. If you're in an area where there's lots of businesses that could use laundry.
Yeah. And I'm like writing as furiously as possible as you're talking. It's great stuff. There's so much. I mean, you're right, man. Hopefully you guys are taking notes. And if you're not, and you're still here, then you're probably going to need to go back and listen to this thing again and start taking some notes. Okay. All right. So you've got about half commercial, half residential. How have you acquired your commercial customers?
Good question. One thing I was really good at that came from financial services that has stuck with me is networking. If you're not a good networking person, you want to get to be a good networking person. You want to learn how to do that. And networking is not going to these meetings like Chamber of Commerce or anything and handing out your business card, because all that happens is they take it and they stuff it away and never see it again. Networking is going to be just going to the hotspots of business owners. And you don't necessarily want to be this salesman to them or anything. What you want to do is you want to find some kind of value you can provide to them up front. And then later you can tell them about your business. So I suppose you were a person in my local area and you wanted to learn the laundromat business. Worst thing I want to hear is somebody come up to me and say, hey, I want to pick your brain. Because what I hear when they say that is, I want to pick your pocket or pick your time, waste your time. What would win my attention there is if you say, hey, I'd love to volunteer at your shop, do some folding for you. If, you know, maybe while I'm doing that, you could spare a few minutes, just kind of like tell me about the business and everything. I don't think any one of us laundromat owners would say no to something like that. Mm-hmm. So you want to do something similar with these, with the networking that you do. What I did that really helped me out with Club Fitness is a gym that's in the plaza of my laundromat. I went up to them and said, hey, you know, I think what could be a great thing to benefit your business and a benefit that you could use to sell more gym memberships is if my store gave an exclusive discount to your members. They walk in, show me the membership card. I'll give them 20% off on the wash and fold treatment, just like a commercial customer. And they were like, yeah, that would be great because that's something that Planet Fitness ain't offering that. Crunch Fitness ain't offering something like that. They don't have that. And you're right around the corner. All they got to do is just walk a few feet down the plaza, drop off the laundry. Probably by the time they get done working out, they can pick it up. And that's helped both of our businesses. So with networking, start with the neighbors. See what you can do there. Because I'll tell you what, like, why is America the big superpower that it is? Well, a big part of what's not talked about is that we have friendly neighbors to the north and the south. You know, Canada and Mexico aren't trying to go to war with us. They're friendly neighbors, happy to trade with us and everything. Adopt the same thing. You want to see how you can benefit your neighbors in the plaza that you're in or the town center that you're in or whatever businesses are close by. See what you can do to be of benefit to them. And that will help you stand out more than just giving them a business card. Some other things, the thing that you want to really be looking into is Facebook groups. Facebook groups is going to be one of your biggest beneficial activities is going through Facebook groups. The local ones to your town, and particularly local ones to business owners and types of businesses. For me out here, it's a lot of Airbnb property owners, property managers. I'm in all of their groups. And when I see them post something about needing clean linens or something, I'm right on it, right on top of it. A lot of networking can be done in Facebook groups.
Yeah, I think that is a very underutilized resource there. And I mean, those can be used on the residential side too, you know, in terms of like mom groups or all kinds of different local Facebook groups. There's the town I have in or town I live in has a Facebook group. That's the, you know, the city buzz. Right. And so, you know, getting in a group like that and again, leading with the value, leading with offering something, and trying to meet people's needs, even sometimes for free, just to kind of, you know, get an inroad in there and build some trust and build some familiarity and make it so you're not just trying to get in people's pocketbooks, but you're also contributing and helping there. So yeah, I think that's huge. And those are good. I love the offering exclusive membership discount to the gym members of the neighboring gym there. I love that because it is a natural fit, right? Like I leave the gym, my clothes are dirty, like they're sweat soaked and they need washed. And so it's just kind of a natural fit for them, natural fit for you. That's a win-win situation. And that's where there's good money to be made. So I love that.
And they were happy for me to put up posters inside the gym, inside the locker rooms and everything.
Yeah, that's killer. That's killer. Okay. We want to talk a little bit about specifics about your business, but anything else that we need to chat about before we get into down to business?
Let's get down to business here because this is where we're going to get like some real juice.
Let's get down to business. Over and out.
Remind us again, when did you buy your laundromat?
Official wrote the check November of 2021. Didn't get to open the doors until May of 2022. Took that long to build out.
And you got one laundromat right now. You got any plans for more? What's the game plan here? Do you know?
Yeah, Hope is actually, there's a vacant unit in the plaza next to us. The hope is that we'll be able to expand out into that.
Yeah.
Become a laundry center instead of just a laundromat.
I like that. And what would you do with that space?
Definitely need more storage for our drop-off business. Yeah. Probably put in a few more big machines because right now my biggest machine, I only got four of them. And that's the most popular machine. Mm-hmm. And we get in some more dryers and everything. But just to have more space for folding and everything. That's another thing to say is that when you're looking for a laundromat to buy, you need a lot more space than you think you do. Don't think too much about having too many machines. Think more about having the space so that it's not a claustrophobic feeling for customers.
Yeah, that is true. And especially if you're going into a drop off or pickup and delivery, that is the limiting factor for a lot of laundromats that want to delve into like pickup and delivery, for example, is there's just the struggle with finding the space. And I remember Mark Vlaskamp of The Fold, he's been on a couple of times. He's been on some other YouTube stuff. He kills it with pickup and delivery. Shout out to Mark. And I'll link to his episodes in case you miss them because they're a killer too. But he sent me a video. He texted me a video one day of just, this was before he got his location and he had guys unloading the truck all out along the sidewalk outside. There were bags of laundry. He goes inside, all along the walls were bags of laundry and all along the bulkheads were bags of laundry. There just wasn't storage for him, right? And this wasn't even his laundromat. This is somebody else's laundromat. So crazy, craziness. But if you're thinking about going into wash, dry, fold, drop off laundry service or pick up and delivery, that storage piece is critical. Yeah, for sure. Can you talk us through like, what's your staff look like? I mean, is it just you running all this laundry? Do you got people on board? How did you start? Where are you at now? Is it similar? How has that evolution taken place?
Yeah, 5 employees, but first it was just me doing everything. Eventually I was able to hire a morning person so I could sleep in. So desperately needed it. And then also hired a person to come do some late night cleaning. Still got those employees. Now I got one employee that specifically handles pickup and delivery for commercial customers because one of the vets that we work with wants that. And the nursery that we do laundry for wanted that as well. And I got another employee for some daytime coverage to take in drop-offs. And then one that comes in at night to do everything that we couldn't get done throughout the day. Kind of the way we handle drop-off is we give them the expectation that it'll take us 24 hours or one day to do it. You'll get it back the next day. Unless you want to pay an extra quarter per pound, we'll do it for you right now and get it back to you same day.
Nice. I like that. All right. So you got 5 employees. I mean, that's pretty incredible to be able to scale up. I mean, relatively quickly. I mean, you're talking May 2022. Right now we're talking January 2023. And you're scaled up to 5 employees. That's pretty good. Especially since you started off sleeping on the floor and losing money. So that's pretty impressive, man. Pretty impressive. Okay. So can we talk about how much does it cost to do laundry at your location?
Yeah, probably going to be raising these prices soon once I get the new Sense system in. And what I'll do is I'll keep the old prices if you pay with a card on the Sense system. And if you pay with coins, I'll raise the price because you're making me do more work. But my biggest wash is $7.75 for the 60-pounders. That's a regular cycle. I'll upcharge you on a deluxe or an ultra cycle by a quarter each and upcharge for warm water and hot water by a quarter each. And that's true of all my machines. I got 4 of those 60 pounders, got 4 of the 40 pounders at $5.50. I've got 5 of the 30 pounders at $4. And I got 8 of the little 20 pound machines at $3. And my dryers, got those stack dryers that the first quarter will buy you 5 minutes, but every quarter after that will buy you 4 minutes.
Nice. Okay. I mean, that sounds great. Do you have a sense of turns per day, like what you're doing these days? I know you had some days where you were doing 0 turns per day. So you have a sense of where you're at now?
Probably the best number I can give you like on average right now is 5.4 to 5.6 turns per day. Really pushing it as hard as I can. And to make it 6 turns a day. That's like the goal here is to make it 6 turns a day. But Here's a critical thing about this, is that this isn't necessarily the golden ratio that everybody thinks it is. I mean, yeah, it shows you that your marketing's working. That's the good thing about it. It shows your marketing's working. But what really matters is how much money is coming in and how much of that money you're keeping, how much profit. So here's one of the things that I did that was right, is I never lowered my prices. And I would encourage everybody watching, don't lower your prices if you're trying to get business. It's not a good thing that you think it is, because you'll be doing more work for less money. Your machines are going to be enduring more wear and tear and giving you less money. And utility bills and everything will cost more because you're using the machines more. And you took in less cash flow from those uses. So I think that a metric you really want to look at is not necessarily profitability by machine. I mean, you can already see which machines are the most used and everything. And I think that's kind of like too nitpicky of a metric to get into, but just the profitability, the net profit overall is, I think, your most important metric, more so than turns per day. Because even if I'm doing three turns per day, I'm at the prices in the area that still get me that profit margin of 30 to 40%. And I'm okay with that because it's less wear and tear on my machines, probably less cleaning that my staff has to do too. Mm-hmm. And it is more money in your pocket.
Yeah. So you do sort of track turns per day, but you're not going all in on turns per day. You're looking at that net profit number.
I'll track it just to know how good my marketing is working.
Yeah, that's smart. I like that. Okay. So are you fully attended? Do you have somebody there at all times when you're open?
Most of the time, yes. Okay. It'll be like a few hours at night where there's nobody there, but we stay open a little bit or there's nobody that can help you with machines and stuff and drop offs there. It's just my cleaner. Mm-hmm. We figure while she's in there, it may as well stay open. But throughout the majority of the day, there's somebody there to help you or somebody you can drop laundry off to. And they know the ins and outs of the store and everything. And I think that will be the future going forward here, is that won't have many unattended laundromats just because of all the problems and liabilities you can run into and can be easily avoided by having an employee there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I mean, we're definitely, as an industry, moving more towards service based. And I don't necessarily mean wash, dry, fold, or pick up and delivery, although I think we are moving more that direction too. But I think, for probably decades, service was not really a priority in self-service laundry because it was like, hey, you do it yourself and deal with it. That's your thing. You're just using my machines. Right. But I do think that service is becoming more and more important, to be able to compete and stay in business, especially as business gets a little more complicated because we've got things like higher interest rates and inflation and growing utility costs. And, we're having to navigate all this stuff and more technology coming into our industry. So there's a lot to navigate there. And that service side of the business is just becoming more and more important along with marketing. And I think you're dead on that one too. So are you planning on staying hybrid? I know you're changing your card payment system. Are you planning on staying hybrid?
Yeah. We want to be able to have people pay anyway that they're willing to pay. If someone wants to give you money, you don't necessarily want to care too much about what form they give it in. But there's some little things you can do around it. Charge less for card payments and easier payments to accept and collect. Yeah. So we'll stay hybrid until we get to a point where coins are obsolete.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said for an all card system, especially if you're going to scale to multiple laundromats. It gets more and more difficult to start collecting coins. But I'm a fan of the hybrid system, and I'm a fan of incentivizing the ways that you want your customers to pay. So if that's the card system that you'd prefer, incentivize that and give them the option to pay. And that's, I think that's a similar tact that people take with top load machines, right? Like, okay, if you want to use a top load machine, that's fine, but we're going to maybe even disincentivize using that and incentivize using the machines we want you to use because it's going to give you a better wash and yada, yada, yada. So I'm a fan of that. All right. Last question for Down to Business that I have, I think is, you may have mentioned this already actually, but do you have an idea of like you were working 18-hour days early on, between your job and the laundromat and all that stuff. Do you have a sense of how much time you're spending on the business now?
I live and breathe my laundromat, and that's my life here. And it's because I'm so determined. And like, if somebody were to trade lives with me, they don't have to do it. They don't have to do it like I do, but I'm just so determined to have a monopoly on the area that I am going to stop at nothing to make that happen. So living and breathing the laundromat right now, but that's not to say that it has to be that way.
Yeah. All right. I thought of another question that I want to ask before we move on to secret sauce here. Okay. I mean, I think we all know the answer to this, but I just want to give you an opportunity to speak to it, which is you hated your corporate job. You made this move to change, you know, directions in your life. You're still working like an animal. Are you glad you made the change or no?
Absolutely. When it comes to corporate America, I'm never going back. I'm never going to, it really is the matrix. It really is the matrix and everything. Like now that you've experienced freedom and what it's like, it's electrifying. It's addictive to be able to say what you really want to say and just dress however you want to dress too, instead of always wearing the suit and tie and everything. I mean, that necktie is a neck shackle, really. And being able to, even though I guess you could say I spend more time on my business and everything, I am happy to be a slave to myself than to corporate America.
Yeah. That's potent. I'm glad I gave you the opportunity to say that, because that's potent. Phrase right there. I like that. And that's that. I think that sums up entrepreneurship, right? It's like, there's all these memes I've seen, you know, it's like you give up working the 10-hour days for someone else to work 18-hour days for yourself, right? Like you're working harder, but you're enjoying it and you're doing it for yourself. And, you know, I think putting it in the way of I'm glad to be a slave for myself, much more than I am to be a slave for the corporate culture. I think that was, you said it way better than I just did, but I mean, I think that's just a very potent quote. So awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. We have a segment of the show called Secret Sauce. And Secret Sauce is, you know, we've been talking about Secret Sauce this entire time here. So, but you know, if you had one piece of advice, maybe, or maybe a couple of quick things that you would give for someone who owns a laundromat currently to help them improve their business, what do you got for them?
I got a lot of things. I don't think they're quick though.
Well, let's just get to them then.
Yeah, here's the juice. Like, yeah, get your pen and paper ready here, because here's the juice. Everything I want to say is print marketing. Don't do it. Never do print marketing. It's a dead form of marketing. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. Direct mail, flyers on people's cars. I tell you what, whenever I go to one of these public places and someone hands me a flyer, I think that what they should say is, here, throw this away from me. That's what I'm thinking the whole time. Mm-hmm. All those things, it's a total waste. All your marketing you want to do digitally, because you have interruption marketing, which could be direct mail, or telemarketing, not that we do that for laundromats, or handing out flyers, sticking things on people's cars. That's interruption marketing versus permission marketing is what you really want to focus on. That's where you're making yourself available to the people who want your services and are seeking you out. Like Google search, those are customers that want your services because they're looking for it. You want to focus more on that. What else I would say? I don't want to name any names. I don't want to badmouth any people, but I would never again hire a person to do digital marketing for me. They're wasting your money. And what they do and everything, and for what they charge, it's just, it's not proportionate. And you pay them $1,000 a month and they put up a few posts a week for you on your Facebook page. It's a waste of money there. It's, you're better off taking the time to learn and understand the social media ecosystem yourself, because you know what's best for your business. You know what goes on in your community. You know who the best people to reach are, what your customers are, not some third party that you hire to do for it. Another thing, secret sauce. There's the website where you want to go back to the principle of speed. You want to get it up as fast as you can, even before your laundromat's even open, if necessary. Get it up as fast as you can. That was a mistake I made. I didn't do that. I used to believe in WordPress that they were the best websites you could have, but something strange happened with WordPress to where it's just not easy to use anymore. I don't know what happened there. So I use Wix now. Wix, I think, is very well worth the extra expense that it costs because it's so easy to edit and do business on and everything. You want to focus on fast loading times for your website because that helps you with your rank in search engines. Wix is very good at making it run fast. It's easy to update. And the more you update your website, the more favorable Google looks at that in search engine results pages. And some people say, well, yeah, I've been told that I should blog on my website for this, but what does a laundromat have to blog about? Totally get that. So legitimate complaint or problem or something. Here's some things I'll show you. Is like, if I'm doing it, what I'll do is, I don't really call it a blog. I just call it news and promos. And there, all I'm doing is just putting up like, hey, here's some promos, new services that I'm introducing, or some new equipment and everything. And that's what I post up on there. I'll do a blog post on our website. I will also post it to Facebook and Google My Business. The more that you are posting on these things, they all work together. They work together to kind of form like this, in music terms, we call it a crescendo, or it's a mosaic of little pieces, Legos that snap together to come up with something great. And I'll kind of try to show you exactly what that looks like here. Landing pages for each service, you know, like here's my pickup and delivery one. Just want to make it very easy to do business with people. Make it like one click. And very first thing you see here is schedule pickup. Very easy to do business with us. I'm going to try to be as convincing as you can with getting people to do business on these landing pages. For those listening, I'm showing this on the screen here. So definitely subscribe to Jordan's YouTube channel. Now, here's the super secret sauce. Like this would be perhaps the most beneficial thing that I could tell somebody here. Maybe make sure I got the screen for it. When it comes to that Google search engine results page, you don't just want to appear on it, and you don't just want to appear on the top. You want to dominate. If I were to type in to a search engine, just laundromat, here's the first thing you see is my ad, my paid ad right here.
Mm-hmm.
My paid ad, I'm utilizing everything possible. This is showing you the Google page, right, on the screen sharing, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Good. Make sure it's showing the right thing. Here's something that is new that Google is doing. These are called site link additions. And then here's another thing that they call, I forget what it's called. It's like something sticky though. But you want to utilize every single one of these. And I'll tell you what, if you're somebody that doesn't know how to do this or anything and you want somebody to walk you through, right, this, reach out to me. Be happy to get on a Zoom call with you to kind of show you how to do this. So first thing you're going to see is my ad. Takes you to our Google My Business page. Then look at this here. We've got our website, our official website, and it's got some services and everything down here.
Well, you skipped over too. You were the top one on the map. Up
top,
above.
Top one on that. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, right here, yeah, because there's my paid ad. Then here's organic search. I'm number one there too.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Our Facebook is the next thing. Then we go down a little bit further. Here's our Instagram. And there's another ad further down the page. The reason you're doing social media is not to just keep doing posts because it's something that people say you should do and it's the any benefit mindset. Maybe somebody will see it, maybe they won't. Reason you're doing it is the more you update your social media, the more the Google search engine likes it. And the more it's likely to put it on one of the earlier pages in search engine results. And now you have not one, not two, but possibly four properties that you can have on that search engine page. People might have to go out of their way to click on your competitors when there's that much of you. Right here, this is our YouTube channel that we uploaded our ads to because we were going to do some YouTube advertising. Here's Manta. I don't even use that directory anymore, but because it links to our main website and our main website gets a ton of traffic from social media and search engines, Google thinks, hey, it's a good thing to show. So you really got to intentionally click on a competitor on that first page of Google results. You want to dominate the first page. Two kinds of ads that you can run at the same time for the same kind of customer are ads that focus on maximizing clicks. That puts you at the top. And then there's another one that focuses on maximizing conversions. That puts you later on in the page. But I think that when a person scrolls through that page, it's because they're just not finding what they're looking for. Google is, its AI is intelligent enough to understand what that person is looking for and show it to them at the most opportune time. Another critical element to this is what I would say is robust keyword discipline. You gotta police your keywords. And I'm gonna try to show you what I mean by that here, because a lot of people think, well, I know the keywords. We want to appear in the search for a laundromat near me. You know what? That's nice. Yeah, a lot of people search for that. That's probably the most popular keyword. But there can be a lot of keywords that you don't want to be ranking for. You don't want to appear in the searches for that. So every couple of weeks or every month, go through this here. And I'd be happy to show somebody how to do this too if they need the help. And look at this here. This shows you what keywords did your ad appear for. And if you see anything that you don't want to appear for, check it and then add it to negative keyword themes. And what that means is these are things that you don't want to appear for. Like me, I don't want to appear for searches for dry cleaning because I don't have any dry cleaning equipment. It's a waste of time for someone to call me up and say, hey, can you do dry clean? Don't want to appear in any of those searches. I put like wash and fold near me because this is my self-service ad. I don't want my self-service ad competing with my wash and fold ad. Laundromat for sale. I don't want to appear for that kind of search. I don't want people calling me up asking if they can buy my business from me. I ain't letting go of this thing for anything. And then there's lots, you'll find lots of unrelated stuff here. When you kick out those bad keywords, your ads are becoming more efficient. They'll be shown to the right people more often. And your cost per click, it will eventually go down. It's going to start out pretty high, but it'll eventually go down here because your ads are becoming more efficient. Mm-hmm. And another thing that you can also be doing is just looking at when these searches are being conducted and focus the majority of your budget on those times. Because I can edit the times right here. Here it doesn't show me like when are they most popular. When you start out, run them all day and everything. And then you can see when are they, when is a laundromat like most searched for on Google in the local area. And then run your ads during those because those are the competitive hours that you really want to win. And let's see, I can show people where that is too. Here, it's kind of over here in the search trends, interest and everything. This is a lot to take in right here. You're kind of like drinking from a fire hose or a fire hydrant right now here with all of this. But when you take, this is why you want to take the time and learn this stuff ahead of time here, because this is what's going to have you destroy your competitors. Start out with a wide net, great budget being spent on all hours of the day, and then refine it. Bring it down. Have these things connect to your landing pages. You want to really understand, watch many YouTube videos on landing pages, understand what works and what doesn't work in landing pages. And all that is, that's just where do you go after we click on the link in Google ad. More traffic from those paid search ads can bring out better results in organic SEO as well. There was a tip I was debating on whether or not I should give out. And that's when you're looking for keywords to rank for, also look for misspelled versions of those keywords, because not everybody spells laundromat the correct way. Some spell it with like a laundry, M-A-T. And what you're looking for here with this,
Yeah,
exactly.
A lot of different ways. Yeah, yeah.
There's a tool that Google has here that shows you how often something is searched on their engine, the keyword planner tool. When you're using that, make sure you localize it. You're not looking for what is the entire U.S. search. You're looking for what the people in your area search, and they allow you to specify it to certain zip codes. So definitely do that. If you want to get your interaction rate above 10% and your cost per click below $2, when you got that, then you're doing really good here. So this is practically 10% compared to how often it appears, how often it's clicked on, and it's just under $2. That's a successful Google campaign. We got the time to really get into the ins and outs of Facebook and Instagram. You think you got time for that?
Yeah, let's just do it.
All right.
Again, so, if you are if you're listening to this, I'll have links to these videos so you can go back and actually see. He's sharing his screen right now, and you can actually see everything that he's talking about. But yeah, let's talk about Facebook ads.
So a lot of people are thinking, I don't even know where to begin with social media, because what's a laundromat going to post about? What could people possibly want to follow my laundromat's page for? Well, I'll tell you, there are three things you can do, and it's not all promotional. A lot of people are thinking that's promotions. People are going to get sick of seeing me promote my business over and over again, and they will. But you can do something very powerful here, and that's make your promotion of your business the thing you do on your page the least. But you may think, well, wait a minute. That's the purpose of me having social media here. And if I'm not promoting my business, what else would I be doing? The principle you want to adhere to is you're making the internet or whatever social media platform that you're on, you're making it a better place. And here's how you do it. It's three things you can post about. One, post something funny. Everybody enjoys a good laugh, even if it's a dad joke. Post something funny. Show you an example here. This here thing about what you can do with lost socks. It's goofy, it's silly and everything. Or this here, little laundry joke, little Star Wars reference. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy to see those, especially if there's cute animals. So post something funny. Another thing is post something helpful, something like maybe a laundry tip or a life hack related to laundry. Something I like to post about is I like to show people videos here of how do we fold people's clothes during our wash and fold. Because this is a way that we add value of our wash and fold is we focus on folds that specifically save space in the customer's dresser. And we show them, here's how we do it. Take your laundry here to us. We're going to fold it like this here. Even complicated stuff like women's underwear is probably very, people don't know where to begin on where to fold that. Or fitted sheets, pants, all sorts of things here. We got a video on just about every sort of article of clothing on how to fold it. And that's what we use for our educational and informative posts. And one third of our time on social media is spent doing those posts. And then we focus
real quick on that one. That one has the added benefit of showing it. It actually is kind of a promotional video in disguise, right? Disguise is a helpful video because, like you said, it's showing the customers, hey, we know what we're doing. Like, here's how we do it. Here's how you could do it better, but we can do it for you. We know what we're doing here. And it demonstrates that authority, which consequently Google also likes, which is probably why your Instagram ranks pretty high on, laundromat in your area, because you're demonstrating that authority. And Google's all about the E, right? Expertise, authority, and whatever the T, I forget what the T is off the top of my head, but yeah. I just wanted to interject that because that's a great little sneaky way to promote while actually being also helpful at the same time.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
The T is traffic. It's a compounding effect. Like the more traffic a page gets, the more Google thinks it's authoritative. Mm-hmm. So notice all of these are videos too. Use video as much as you can on Instagram and Facebook because they want to compete with TikTok. So they favor the videos. And then I'm promotional. I do something like this here. Or say, good reasons to wash your bedding. So this video here. Got a cute baby and a cute puppy on the bed. Or this here, talking about our Money Back Mondays thing. Yeah, with some videos, great resource is the website pexels.com. You can get a lot of good stock footage that you can play around with. And you can make these videos and on canva.com because they specifically format them to fit for Instagram Reels and Facebook Reels. And they give you a whole bunch of our tools to make it very easy. You don't have to be a world-class editor or anything to make this stuff.
I'll have links to both Canva and Pexels, by the way, in the show notes, or if you're on YouTube down below. Go ahead.
Yeah, another thing, those are just our videos. But we also want to take a look here at our regular picture posts. This is something I want to do every single time I post something that's not a video, something that's just a picture. It's a carousel. It's multiple pictures at a time. Why am I doing this? Well, for one, do more than just tell the joke for our funny posts or give the tip for our helpful posts. Throw in a little thing here that says, hey, this is what we got going on today. It's Big Wash Wednesday. That's the promo. Or, and then here is just all of the information on our laundromat, where it's located and everything. It's a carousel. And that means that when someone scrolls through it and they go through those pictures like we just did, to the social media algorithm, that counts as engagement. And that also counts with Google as something they favor as well. Mm-hmm. This is a well-engaged post. Engagement is going to be important later on when you're doing ads. But it also helps you in the natural algorithm for social media. Reels, what I've heard, the rule is that you want it to be 7 seconds long. Forget the reason behind that. Like it's like an attention span thing. Give it a good description. Don't waste too much time on descriptions. Your time is better served making more reels, more videos, more posts than trying to mine out as much goodness out of each one. Now, here's the problem you run into. Facebook, Instagram, Meta in general. They're not your friends when it comes to showing what you post to your followers or the people that have already decided, hey, I want to do business with them. I want to follow them. They're not your friend. So they're not going to show it to them all the time. But you can overcome this. One thing is that with Facebook, whenever I post on there, I'm doing it through the planner, the page planner in Meta Business Suite. It will also allow you to post specifically to Facebook groups. It lets you do a post up to 3 at a time. Find yourself 3 good Facebook groups to post to, and they'll let you do it. Those Facebook groups, what I like from the local area is ones that you'd mentioned earlier. It's moms, those mom groups. And another one that I like is the college student groups, because we got 3 colleges here in Daytona. And I try to get my content into those groups as well. And I'm also just paying attention to what's going on in those groups here, because I want to see what's going on in the community. Maybe there's something that our laundromat can service or help with. So Facebook is not your friend in doing it naturally on its own. But Facebook can be your friend when you pay them. When you pay for them to be your ad. And also with Facebook and Instagram stories, if you're running daily promos like I do every weekday, those make for good stories, because that way you're not doing a post of them every day, just reminding people of stories that disappear when the day's over. But back to what I said, Facebook is your friend when you pay them. You want to run
that's,
3
That's like
times
most of my friends, by the way. That's how I get friends.
Yeah.
Dish out the money.
So. Another struggle, yep.
Yeah.
3 kinds of ads you want to do. The first one is an educational ad that just kind of tells people about your service, what the benefit is of it, why they should use it and everything. I'll show you an example of it here. Like this is an example of that ad. It just talks about how much of your life is spent doing laundry, goes through it step by step here. And in conclusion, a person can waste about 1.6 years of their life doing laundry if you're just doing one load a week. But if you're a family, it's about 5 years of your life gone doing 4 loads a week. You want to get that time back? Our wash and fold service will help with that. For that campaign, is getting too really deep in the weeds. If you want to know more about this, contact me. But for that campaign, you want that to be an awareness building campaign, but a local radius. Here's the juiciest thing I've ever learned about Facebook is a lot of people think they should specifically target certain kinds of people and demographics in Facebook. No, don't do that. Don't do that. It's really nice that it's this easy, but Facebook and Instagram, what they want more than anything else is for people to stay on their app, to stay on the platform and keep scrolling. So they're only going to show your ads to the people they think would be most interested in it. They don't want to clog up the ads. They don't want to clog up the streams of people with apps and ads that are not relevant to them. That will make them think, man, Facebook showing me too much garbage I'm not interested in. Let me go somewhere else. Let me go do something else. So don't try to figure out who your audience is. Let Facebook do it for you, because they are much better at gathering data and sifting through that data than any person could be. Also, another critical thing here about ads is this thing here called the pixel. I tell you what, for a lot of people, the best thing you can do, you can call up Meta. Get an appointment. It's totally free. They will tell you how to set up these campaigns, how to install the pixel. Basically, what the pixel does is it tracks what do people do after seeing your ad. Do they go to your website? Where do they click on their website? And it saves those people. You don't actually ever know who they are, but Facebook saves who it is so you can run ads to them again later, because you know how many times a person has to see something before they take action. They say sometimes it's 7 times. I think it's more like 3 or 4 times. So you want to save that data, and you do that with the pixel. Call Meta. They will talk you through how to set this up here. I've had 3 phone calls with them. I haven't paid a cent because I pay so much in these Facebook ads. I run so many of them. So that's ad one that you run the pixel off of is an awareness building campaign. The next one would be a traffic campaign where you want them to take a certain action, like click a link and go to a certain landing page. And then the last one is what's called a retargeting ad campaign, where it's using the data that it collected from the pixel, like who took action, and then remarketing to them as well. And this is all good, because when you get people off of Facebook to your website or off Instagram to your website, those are traffic hits that Google pays attention to help you rank higher. And they also take a look at where did that traffic come from. Came from your social media. They like that better than if it came from somewhere else. And with the ads, what I use are carousel ads, which people have to kind of click through here to see. It's kind of tiny here, but people click through like those carousel posts, and that counts as engagement, and they'll move it up, because a person would probably only look through those if they're interested. And that's also a customer that the pixel will capture to retarget to later. Retargeting is important because it allows you to get a second chance with a customer that just hasn't seen enough of your advertising yet to want to try you, or remind them that you exist after maybe a bad experience with a competitor. With Facebook, you'll have lower click-through rates, but you're also going to pay less per click. You'll pay like maybe 50 cents a click, and that's worth doing. And the reason for that is, people don't go to Facebook or go to Instagram specifically to look for a laundromat to do business with. That's a critical thing you want to know about your Google advertising, by the way. I kind of skipped over it. Is that what's real critical to pay attention to is user intent. The user of the search engine, what is their intent with each keyword? You want to put yourself in those shoes and think from that perspective of, when someone types in this keyword, are they looking for a laundromat to do business with and spend money at? If the answer is no, that keyword is useless and you shouldn't use it. But all these things you can see here working together are what's going to allow you to dominate the search engine results page of Google, be on the first page, and allow you to win new customers. And I'll tell you what, that more than anything else is how I won a bunch of my commercial customers, because they called me. I didn't go running around knocking on doors trying to get them to come to, trying to get them to use my laundromat. A lot of them came to me and called me up. And this is how you do it, is by dominating the first page on Google.
I did not realize that we were just going to get a masterclass today when we jumped on this interview. We went from this like emotional story to like straight up Laundromat Marketing University, like right here, right now, today. I love it. Incredible. And, you know, just first of all, man, thank you. Appreciate just sharing all that level of detail, showing the screen shares. Once again, links will be down below if you want to go, and you're listening and you want to go check out the actual screen share that he was sharing, or if you're watching on YouTube and you want to go back and reference just these little clips without having to scroll through and find them, go check those videos out in the links there. But man, super secret sauce is an understatement for what all that you just talked through, from Google to Facebook and Instagram ads. Like, holy cow, man, that's great. And I'm just sitting here as you're talking, I was just sitting over here thinking, oh, well, man, no wonder you're dominating right now and have come from where you were to where you are now, is because you have obviously invested a lot of time and effort and money into learning how to dominate your market. And that is exactly what you're doing, both online and offline. You're well on your way to doing that also. So, dude, huge kudos to you. I want to make sure you hit everything you want to hit in the secret sauce, because I don't want to move on until you've said everything you want to say. So let me know if you got anything else. Otherwise, we'll move on to pro tips.
I'll give you one more little thing here. You want to look into what's called geofencing. Mm-hmm. Financial services, a lot of people say you pay attention to what the smart money does. The hedge fund managers, the pension managers, the endowment managers. That's the so-called smart money, because it's billions of dollars. What are they investing in? In laundromats, we can do the same thing here. We look at, what do the Williford brothers spend a lot of money on? Or what do they use for marketing? What is some of the other guys that own multiple mats and are raging success do? Well, I saw that they were spending a lot of money on geofencing, and I wanted to know, what is that and everything. The company I use, Kalari Media, the guy that runs it, Ernesto Kalari, he could do a much better job of explaining it than I could. Probably be a great guy to have as a guest on the show sometime here.
Yeah. But
they have a way of using satellite and cell phone data and foot traffic data to determine who's visiting your competitors. And let's show them some ads while they browse the internet, so that if they have a bad experience at a competitor, they know there's another laundromat that might be nicer and is newer that they can go to. We've been doing them for about 2 months, and he has a way to show me specifically what kind of foot traffic I got from it. I've gotten some foot traffic, some successes. It generally does take probably about 2-3 months to really start working and everything, but that's another little gem I'll give you there for secret sauce. It's called geofencing, and Kalari Media, Kullari, is who you want to check out.
Nice. Yeah. And yeah, man, connect me up and we'll chat with him too. That'd be awesome. All right. Holy cow. That was the most thorough, in-depth secret sauce we have ever had by far. And I mean, you stated at the beginning, hey, the goal is to make this the best episode, and we're well on our way here and some. So awesome. All right. Let's talk about pro tips. Somebody who is, maybe they're desperate in their to get out of their job, or maybe they're just looking for a side investment or whatever the case may be. They're looking to buy their first laundromat. What advice can you give somebody in that situation?
Pro tips.
All right. Start out with competitive analysis. If you find a failing laundromat, ask yourself, why is it failing? If you find a successful laundromat, ask yourself, why is it so successful? What are they doing right? Mm-hmm. Study your competition as well. Just see what are their weak points. What are some things where you can add value? What I found that would help me get an easy win was just having automatic doors in my laundromat, because no other laundromat in town has that. And a lot of customers have given a lot of positive feedback to that. Another thing you could be doing here is you want to get started on your digital marketing right away. Get started on learning how to do it and everything. Learn the Google ecosystem and the Meta and the Facebook ecosystem. Understand those things. Website construction, start that right away. Don't wait until the laundromat was open like I did. Because here's my fear, was that I put the little website up, or I put the Google business profile up, and people find it, and then they come to the laundromat and see it's still under construction, and they're jaded, and I lose that customer. That doesn't happen. What happens is they look forward to your opening, and they're like, oh, I can't wait to check this place out because it's closer than the one I normally go to or something like that. And also with Google My Business, I had this horrible thing happen to me early on where to verify that you own the business, they send a postcard with a code to the location. Mm-hmm. I had to wait months before mine came. So for months that we were open, I wasn't even on Google. And that definitely hurt us bad. It was a big black eye that we took early on. So that's something that you should be doing from the start. Get started on marketing right away and do that competitive analysis from the very beginning.
So I was just saying real quick on the getting online as soon as possible. You're absolutely right. They do physically mail you something that can take a long time, but also your website. Like I hear a lot of people who are like, I don't want to put my website up because it's not, you know, we're not open. And maybe their fear is, you know, somebody's going to come and check it out and it's not going to be open. But a lot of times what their fear is like, hey, I don't, you know, the laundromat's not ready, right? Maybe they're doing renovations or whatever. It's, I don't want people showing up or even when they're under contract, sometimes I'll say, hey, this is looking like it's going to close. It's looking good. Let's get your website up ASAP, because it also takes time for Google to index that site, basically like a seasoning period, right? Before Google starts testing you to see where you're going to fit in the rankings. And again, the goal is to dominate that first page. But it takes time to get there, and it doesn't always happen right away. And so I'd say, hey man, get that stuff up and get it going as soon as possible, because it's just going to benefit you. And I love the way that you're phrasing dominating the first page. Same with the social sites, you know, put up coming soon, put up, hey, we're getting new equipment, hey, whatever you're doing, and get it up and going ASAP. Yes, to communicate with the customers, but also more so to even season, so you can start moving up the ranks in Google. So I just wanted to add that, but great tip.
Yeah. And the last thing I'd say is don't have a white floor. I had a white floor, terrible mistake.
I did the same mistake. Yeah. Yeah. I thought, hey, white floor, I just got to keep it clean. It's going to look nice all the time and it's going to look good. It's just impossible to keep it white. So no matter what I did, I just couldn't keep it white. So that's a good little pro tip, actually. Never had that one on the show. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. The final segment we have on the show is called Recommended Resources. We are Laundromat Resource. And so do you have any resources that you can recommend to help people grow personally or help them grow their business?
Get coaching. I tell you, coaching, they may think it's expensive, but here's the thing. Is that it's better to spend $1,000 on a coach who can save you tens of thousands of dollars. So if you got the opportunity to get coaching from someone like a Jordan or a Waleed Cope or something, go for it, because it's worth the expense. Because a smart man learns from his own mistakes. Wise man will learn from the mistakes of others. So that's totally worth doing. Your neighbors, we covered this earlier, like the gym in my plaza. Get friendly with your neighbors. That's why America is successful, is because we don't have hostile neighbors. Another thing I'd say is that next best resource would be Facebook groups. Laundromat Owners is one of them. And I think the other one's called Laundromat Owners Ideas for Success. Those are well worth doing.
Yeah. And I'll put links.
You want to join them? Yep. Join them. You'll see a host of tips. Yeah. I think you get more good information out of those Facebook groups than you would ever get from the Coin Laundry Association membership.
All right, there you have it. I'm not going to argue with you. Man, this has been incredible. I've been looking forward to this episode since we first talked way back when. But I got to say, man, it's blown me away. My expectations have been far, far, far exceeded. And, you know, I know that in the middle of it all, it probably didn't feel like it, but, you know, at this point, looking back, it seems obvious to me, like you were going to dig yourself out of it. And, you know, sometimes you just have to go through stuff to get to a point where you can become the person you need to be to get to where you want to go in life. And I think that is something that we overlook a lot, and we want kind of the easy thing. And this industry kind of attracts that, right? It attracts the, hey, an easy button. Hey, I'm just going to have to come and collect. Hey, it's passive. Hey, you know, it attracts that sort of like easy button kind of personality, but, or just desire, but man, sometimes in life, we just need to go through things, not because of anything about us, not because there's anything wrong with us, not because we're failures, not for any of those reasons, but it's because we need to go through some of those things to develop in ourselves the skills and the character and the abilities that we need to become the person that we want to be, to have the life we want to have. And now here you are, not saying that you've made it to where you want to go, not saying that everything's perfect, not saying that you're not going to have, you know, struggles and trials going ahead, but you're working for yourself now and you're building your own thing. Yeah. You're a slave to your own self, to your own desires, and not to somebody else's. And you're on your way going where you want to go. And I loved your story. And then just to kind of the 1-2 punch and follow it up with just, man, incredible practical tips. This truly has been one of the best, if not the best episode. So man, I really appreciate you spending your time to come on here. I have one last question for you. I have a feeling that your story and your knowledge is going to be very compelling for people. It's compelling for me. I think it's going to be compelling for a lot of people. So is there a good way that if somebody wants to reach out to you to just, you know, ask you any questions, fill you out, maybe talk to you about some of the marketing stuff that you were talking about, or just, you know, wants to tell you how awesome you are. Is there a good way that they can connect with you?
Absolutely. Because I'm happy to help people out, send the elevator back down, help people avoid the pain I had to, the painful lessons I had to learn the hard way. So you want to reach out to me? Absolutely. We can arrange for it to talk on the phone or get on a Zoom call. We can say just start with my email, DaytonaLaundromat@gmail.com. I'm also fanatical about the Facebook Messenger. So you can always message the laundromat. It's just facebook.com/DaytonaLaundromat or instagram.com/DaytonaLaundromat. It all ends up in the same place. So you want to get some help that would save you from a lot of the problems I experienced and get to dominate the Google page in your local area, I'd be happy to take you through that and just show you the kind of the ins and outs of it, or at least point you to the resources of how I was able to do it there. Because there's a lot of free information, a lot of free resources out there that a lot of people just don't know about. And I'd certainly say to you, Jordan, thank you for having me on. It was great that I was able to rebound from the horrible place I was in to be able to be good enough to be on and share all these tips. I hope that we did give it the best episode ever. If not, always happy to come back and share some more of this juice here with the audience, because I know a lot of these guys from the Facebook groups and everything. It's a great audience out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll definitely have you back on. We'll be doing some more stuff together, I'm sure, because you're, like I said, your story's not done yet. I can tell you're just revving up right now. So I'm excited to see where you go. And again, thank you for coming on. So I'll have his contact information in the show notes. If you're on YouTube, that'll be down below. But reach out, tell him how great he is. Thank him for coming on the show and sharing all this great stuff. Reach out with your questions. Michael, man, incredible. Thank you again for coming on. Appreciate you.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. We'll do some more stuff real soon. So stay tuned for that.